We're going to have some fun tonight. God is calling us to go deeper in our faith, and he wants us to know the big story of Christianity. So what is the essence of Christianity? And we're going to answer this question using a very practical scenario which builds upon years of talking about our relationship with God, the reality of free will and moral consequences. Now, most of you here are ready to hear this. Now, if you're a guest here, welcome. I hope you find this, and I hope all of us find this resonant with our hearts. And I hope we find it all thought-provoking. So we've talked before a number of times about the reality of mortal sin. There are three conditions for mortal sin. It has to be a gravely wrong action. You have to know it's wrong, and you have to freely choose to do it anyway. Now, if we choose this action, by definition, we separate ourselves from God. And if we separate ourselves from God and we die in that state, we go to hell. Now, God doesn't send us to hell. We choose hell. And God ratifies our choice. Now, the only way this relationship with God can be repaired is with confession. Because when you're spiritually dead by mortal sin, you need someone to spiritually resuscitate you, like what happens in baptism. Now, the best way to understand this is with the analogy of marriage. I knew a husband in his 40s. He left his wife and kids for a younger woman. So the wife and the three children were devastated. And that marriage is now completely broken. Now, he said he had to do it to find himself. Now, that's a reality of choices. That marriage is broken. Can it be repaired? Yeah. Yeah, he has to go to confession. He better apologize to his wife. He has to do penance. And he's going to have to rebuild a lot of trust and love. Now, here's a practical scenario that I want all of us to consider. The practical scenario is this. Let's say I commit a mortal sin. Okay? Now, I'll let you guess which one it is. Okay. Let's say I commit a mortal sin. Now, I've chosen hell. If I die in that state, I'm going to hell forever. Now, here's the scenario. I do this, and then I repent, and I say, I want to be reconciled with God. So I decide I'm going to go to confession. Now, on my way driving to confession, one of you bad drivers hits me, and I die. So the question is, do I go to hell? By analogy, let us say that that husband I talked about, that I just mentioned, that husband who destroyed his marriage by his own free choice, his marriage is broken, is it not? And he wants to reconcile to his wife, and he decides he's going to confession. He's going to drive to confession, and right after he's going to go to his wife and apologize. But he gets hit by a car on the way there, and he dies. Is his marriage reconciled? No. So we're going to answer this scenario. And to do it, we need to know the essence of the story of Christianity. And we get a snapshot of that in today's gospel. Now, this is a story about God and man, about sin and love and mercy. Now, in the gospel, there are three ways we are going to know the essence of the story of Christianity. And they all have to do with who Jesus is. Now, the first way we're going to know that is you're going to look at three different groups of people. And you notice these three different groups of people, they all tempt Jesus in the same way. They all say to him, you have to come down from the cross. This is what they say. The leaders scoffed at Jesus, saying, he saved others. Let him save himself if he is the Christ of God, his chosen one. The soldiers also mocked Jesus, saying, if you are the king of the Jews, save yourself. One of the criminals who were hanged there kept deriding him and saying, are you not the Christ? Save yourself and us. Now, all three are tempting him. And by tempting him, they're getting at the root of his identity. They're trying to figure out, who is Jesus? We got to get to, who is Jesus? Now, if Jesus is just a man, like a man, you know what he would do? He would do what they want. He would save himself, because that's what humans always do. Humans always save themselves at the expense of someone else. But Jesus is God, and God is love, and love gives, and love sacrifices itself for other people. So he loves even when he's surrounded by evil. And that is proof he's God. That's proof that Jesus is God, because only God would completely love people who don't love him. And he also proves he's God by going to extremes. Now, Jesus could have died in a less gruesome way. It could have been an easier sacrifice, but he chose to go to extremes to prove his love for us, and then to prove how precious you are. I want you to just think about that. Do you realize how precious you are in God's sight? That's what he went through, all that for you and for me. And at the same time, by dying on that cross, slowly and in a horrible way dying, he shows us how bad sin is, because all of us are really kind of naive. We always underestimate sin. It's not that bad. Pornography is not that bad. Adultery, it's not that bad. Sex outside of marriage, getting drunk, it's not that bad. No. Jesus died to forgive those sins. These are really harmful to the human person. Now, the second way we're going to know the identity of Jesus, and we're going to get to the essence of Christianity, is this. There was also an inscription over him. This is the King of the Jews. So that sign above Jesus' cross, that's a humiliation. They're saying he's a king, but who would follow a king who's naked? Who would follow a king who's executed? But he accepts that humiliation without any thought of revenge. He even prays for his persecutors. He says a prayer that has changed the whole world forever. He says, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." So Jesus is a king, but he's not the king we're expecting. He's king of the universe, and instead of a throne, instead of ruling from a throne, he rules from a cross. And instead of being served, he serves. And instead of robes, he's naked. But that nakedness shows his vulnerability, which is a strength, because nothing can take him away from his mission. So he's a king who rules with love. And he shows that obedience to truth and goodness, that is his law. There are two criminals who are crucified with him. One derides him, but it says, but the other rebuked the other criminal, saying, "Do you not fear God? Since you were under the same sentence of condemnation, and we indeed have been condemned justly, for we are getting what we deserve for our deeds. But this man has done nothing wrong." Now, there's been a lot written about this idea of fear of God. Now, modern people, no one likes to talk about fear of God. Now, it is true, it can be misunderstood, and so it can be harmful. We don't want to go there, but we want to understand what does it mean to be to have fear of the Lord, because it's actually a good thing. And also, modern man, you know what we do? We always sanitize everything. If there's something in God that makes us just a bit uncomfortable, we just get rid of it instead of actually facing it and dealing with it. You remember I told you about a friend of mine? We're having dinner, this good friend, and according to his religion, he says he's not supposed to be eating the food that he just ordered. Now, he told me this, and so I say to him, "Why are you ordering that food? Why are you eating it?" And he gives me this excuse. He says, "Yeah, I think God understands that I really just like this food." And I was thinking, man, your God is such a pushover. Your God is not serious. Now, that kind of God, a pushover God, would never die for us. Because that kind of God is not serious. Now, the real God, he's serious. He's serious about loving us. He's serious about sin. And he's so serious that he sent his only son to die for those sins. Saint Hilary in the 300s, he noted three things about fear of the Lord according to the Bible, three beautiful things about fear of the Lord. Number one, fear of the Lord has to be taught. You don't start out with fear of the Lord. It's not an ordinary fear, like fear of suffering. That's not the kind of fear we're talking about. Number two, it consists in love. And you show fear of the Lord by obedience to his law. And number three, there's always blessings attached to the fear of the Lord. This is something really good. So that criminal, we also call him the good thief. He's got fear of the Lord. And what does he do? He takes responsibility for his sins and he doesn't make excuses.